So last episode we talked about how your brain runs a full machine learning training pipeline while you sleep. Replay, consolidation, pruning, the whole thing.
Yeah, and I remember lying in bed at night, being like, "All right, brain, do your thing," like I was waiting for a loading bar to finish.
And I got this thought stuck in my head afterward that I couldn't shake. We compared sleep to ML training. We said the brain does replay-like experience replay and reinforcement learning, that it prunes connections like dropout regularization, that REM sleep stress tests emotional scenarios like adversarial training. And I realized I used all of those terms, and I don't actually know what half of them mean.
Oh no!
Like, I use AI tools every single day. I code with them, I write with them, I literally built the show's production pipeline with them. But if you asked me, what is machine learning, actually, under the hood, I'd give you vibes. Confident vibes. But vibes.
That's like driving a car every day, and someone asking you how an engine works, and you're like, fire goes in a circle.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people are in this position right now. You use AI constantly. You have opinions about AI. You read AI headlines. But you couldn't explain the difference between supervised and unsupervised learning if someone put a gun to your head.
I definitely could not.
So today's episode is not learn machine learning in 20 minutes. That's impossible, and anyone who promises it is lying. What this episode actually is, it's the map. It's the thing you look at before you start hiking so you know which trails exist, where they lead, and which one matches your shoes.
The K. I like maps. Maps I can do.
Good, because here's where it starts. Machine learning is the subfield of AI where instead of programming a computer with rules, like, if the email contains the word prints, it's spam. You feed it thousands of examples and it figures out the rules itself. You give it 10,000 photos labeled cat and 10,000 labeled dog, and it learns to tell them apart. Nobody wrote an if has whiskers rule. The system finds its own patterns by adjusting internal weights until its predictions match reality.
So it's not programming, it's training.
That's the whole distinction. Traditional programming is, you write the rules, the computer follows them. Machine learning is, you provide the examples, the computer discovers the rules. And that one difference is what everything else builds on.
Okay, so what are the actual categories? Because I hear terms thrown around, neural networks, deep learning, reinforcement learning, and I have no idea if those are like different things or different words for the same thing.
Right, so think of it this way. There are really four big paradigms. And if you've ever played an RPG with a skill tree, I'm talking the Path of Exile passive tree, or the Sphere Grid in Final Fantasy X. This maps perfectly. The entire field of machine learning is a massive skill tree. There are clusters of nodes, and those clusters are the paradigms. But the key thing is, they're all connected. And where you choose to start on that tree determines what you learn first, what comes easy, and what you have to backtrack for later.
Okay, so what are the clusters?
First cluster, supervised learning. This is where you give the model labeled data. Here's an email, it's spam. Here's an email, it's not spam. And it learns to predict labels for data it hasn't seen yet. This is the most common type of ML in production. Spam filters, medical imaging, recommendation systems, credit scoring. If a company says they use AI, there's like a 70% chance they mean supervised learning.
That one makes intuitive sense. You're basically showing it flashcards.
Exactly. Second cluster, unsupervised learning. No labels at all. You just dump data in and say, find me something interesting. The model discovers hidden structure, clusters customers into segments you didn't know existed, detects anomalies in network traffic, reduces a dataset with 100 variables down to the 3 that actually matter.
So supervised is flashcards and unsupervised is dumping a box of Lego on the floor and seeing what shapes emerge.
That's pretty good, yeah. Third, reinforcement learning. This one's different. An agent takes actions in an environment and gets rewards or penalties. It learns strategy through trial and error. This is how DeepMind's AlphaGo learned Go, how robots learn to walk. Remember episode 70, when we talked about AI learning to play games?
Yeah, the Pac-Man Ghosts episode.
That was all reinforcement learning. The agent isn't studying examples. It's playing the game, losing, adjusting, and playing again. And this is actually the paradigm that maps most closely to what we described in the Dreams episode. Your brain replaying scenarios and adjusting based on outcomes.
Oh, so when I said my brain was running a loading bar, it was specifically a reinforcement learning loading bar.
Kind of, yeah. And then the fourth paradigm, and this is the one that powers basically every AI tool you and I use, self-supervised learning. The model generates its own labels from the data. Like, you take a sentence, mask out a word, and the model has to predict what goes there. The cat set on the do that billions of times across the entire internet's text, and you get GPT. Do it with images and you get the vision models.
Wait, so the model is basically quizzing itself?
Yes, it creates its own flashcards from raw data. That's what makes it so powerful. You don't need humans to label anything. The data labels itself. And the reason this matters is that there's basically an unlimited unlabeled data in the world. Every book, every website, every image. Ashish Vaswani and his co-authors at Google published Attention is All You Need in 2017, which introduced the transformer architecture. And that paper is essentially the reason this fourth paradigm took over the world. Every major LLM, GPT, Claude, all of them, is built on that architecture.
So all four of these clusters are on the skill tree, and they are all connected, but people treat them like they are one thing.
That's the problem. When someone says AI in 2026, they usually mean the fourth cluster, the LLM stuff. But machine learning has been a field since the 1950s. Frank Rosenblatt built the first trainable neural network, the perceptron, in 1957. The backpropagation algorithm that made deep networks practical came from David Rumelhart, Jeffrey Hinton, and Ronald Williams in 1986. Alex Krajewski, Ilya Sutskever, and Hinton again. That guy is everywhere. Built AlexNet in 2012 and basically kicked off the deep learning revolution by crushing the ImageNet competition. The history is long and deep, and the current LLM moment is just the latest chapter.
So asking should I learn ML? Well, only knowing about ChatGPT is like asking should I learn to cook while only knowing about the microwave.
And now we're in the right territory, because cooking is actually the perfect way to think about what comes next, which is, how do you actually start learning this stuff?
Right, because the skill tree is great, but like, which node do I click first?
So think about how people learn to cook. There are distinct levels. Level 1. You follow a recipe exactly. You measure every ingredient. You set timers. You do not improvise, in ML terms. This is using a pre-trained model through an API. You type a prompt into ChatGPT. You get a result. You're cooking, technically, but you have no idea why it works.
That's where I live. I'm a recipe follower. I don't even know what the MATLAB reaction is. I mean, I've heard the words.
Level 2. You understand why the recipe works. You know that deglazing with acid lifts the fond off the pan and creates a sauce base. You know that the Maillard reaction is what creates flavor when proteins and sugars react under heat. And that's why you sear meat on high heat instead of low. In ML terms, this is understanding what backpropagation does, what a loss function measures, why you split data into training and test sets. You can modify the recipe. You can diagnose what went wrong.
And level 3 is you don't need the recipe anymore.
Level 3. You're improvising. You open the fridge, see what's there, and cook something. You can substitute ingredients because you understand the chemistry. Auguste Escoffier codified French cooking in the early 1900s by identifying five mother sauces, béchamel, velouté, espagnole, hollandaise, and tomato. And the whole point was that every other sauce is a variation. Master those five and you can make anything. ML has the same structure. There are foundational algorithms, linear regression, logistic regression, decision trees, gradient boosted methods, neural networks, and everything else is a variation. Master the mother sauces of ML and you can improvise.
Okay, so that's the progression. But how do you actually move through it? Because I can see the cooking levels, I don't know how to get from one to the next.
And this is where it gets interesting, because there are three genuinely different teaching philosophies out there, and which one works depends entirely on how you learn. And they map to something we've actually talked about before. Remember episode 149. The apprenticeship economy.
The unpaid labor episode. Yo!
So for centuries, the guild system taught crafts through a progression. Apprentice, journeyman, master, and the three main ML educators right now each embody a different stage of that progression, starting from a different assumption about what you need first.
Okay, who are they?
First, Andrew Ng. He's the Stanford professor who taught CS229, launched one of the first MOOC ever in 2011. And has now taught over 4.8 million people through Coursera. His approach is bottom-up. You start with the math, linear regression, cost functions, you do gradient descent by hand, on paper. You build intuition for why things work before you ever touch a framework. This is the traditional guild master approach. You learn to sharpen the chisel before you touch the wood.
That sounds very thorough and also very painful.
It is. But the result is deep understanding. People who come through NG's pipeline can diagnose problems that people who started with tools can't even see. The trade-off is time and patience. You're going to spend weeks on math before you build anything that feels like AI.
Okay, what's door number two?
Jeremy Howard and Rachel Thomas, who founded Fast.ai in 2016. Their philosophy is the exact opposite. They call it the whole game approach, borrowed from sports coaching. In basketball, you play a full game on day one. You don't spend 3 months on dribbling drills before you're allowed to touch a hoop. In Fast.ai's first lesson, you train a working image classifier. It works. You've built an AI that does something real. Then you spend the rest of the course peeling back layers to understand why. The only prerequisite is knowing Python. Howard's exact line is if you can write a for loop, you're ready.
Oh, that's the apprentice model. You're sweeping the workshop floor, holding tools, watching the master work. You're in the whole environment before you understand any of it.
Exactly, and the thing about the guild apprenticeship model is, it worked. For centuries, most craft mastery in human history was achieved not by studying theory first, but by being embedded in practice and extracting theory from experience. Howard is making the explicit argument that this is how human learning works, and the traditional academic model has it backward.
So who's right, the professor or the hacker?
That's the genuine debate, and the field is honestly split. That there's a third door. Andrej Karpathy, he was at Tesla running their autopilot vision team. He was a founding member of OpenAI. He has a free YouTube series called Neural Networks, Zero to Hero. His philosophy is, build everything from scratch. Lesson 1, you build a tiny, automatic differentiation engine he calls MicroGrad. That's literally backpropagation implemented in about 100 lines of Python. Then you build character-level language models. Then you build a full GPT from scratch.
So he's the journeyman phase. You're actually forging the tools yourself.
That's it. The journeyman traveled between workshops and learned by building variant techniques in each one. Karpathy's argument is, you don't understand it until your hands have built it, and he's got the credentials to back it up. This isn't some YouTuber explaining something he read about. He built the thing at scale.
Okay, so let me make sure I have this. Three doors. ND says learn the math first, then build. Howard says build first, then learn the math. Karpathy says build the tools themselves, and the math will fall out of the construction.
And here's what I find really interesting. On the skill tree, these are three different starting nodes. NG starts at the fundamentals cluster and works outward toward application. Howard starts at a powerful in-game node and backtracks to fill in prerequisites. Karpathy takes the crafting path, building each node by hand as he goes. All three reach the same competence region of the tree, just through wildly different routes.
So the question isn't which path is best. It's which starting node matches you.
Right. And there's actually a bonus companion piece. Grant Sanderson's 3 Blue, 1 Brown channel has a neural network series with some of the clearest mathematical visualizations I've ever seen. His animations of gradient descent, which, by the way, is just the learning algorithm. Imagine you're blindfolded on a hillside and you feel the slope under your feet and take one step downhill. Repeat. His animations make that tangible in a way that equations on a page never will. It works alongside any of the three paths.
Okay. I want to back up to something though, because I feel like we're making this sound very glamorous, and I remember from the data episode 175, The Void Beneath Your Data, one, that the reality is, you know, less glamorous.
Oh, way less glamorous. Cheers, the thing nobody tells you. Roughly 80% of an ML engineer's actual job is data preparation, cleaning data, formatting it, handling missing values, resolving inconsistencies. The modeling, the neural network part, the fun part, is a small fraction of the work. You're Escoffier, but you spend 80% of your time washing lettuce.
That's devastating.
And there's more. In production, most ML isn't deep learning at all. It's not transformers. It's not neural networks. It's logistic regression, random forests, gradient boosted trees, the unsexy, interpretable stuff that's fast and reliable. A data scientist at a bank predicting loan defaults is almost certainly using XGBoost, not GPT.
So the thing I use every day, the chatbot, is actually the weird exception, not the rule.
Completely the exception. And here's maybe the most counterintuitive part. More data isn't always better. After a point, additional data hits diminishing returns, and dirty data, mislabeled, inconsistent, biased data, actively makes the model worse. Data curation matters more than data volume, which is, I mean, that's basically what episode 175 was about from a different angle.
So models can overeat.
They can, and they can also memorize the wrong things. It's called overfitting. The model memorizes the training data so perfectly that it fails on new data, like studying only past exams word for word, and then bombing a test that asks the same concepts in slightly different ways. The opposite is underfitting. The model's too simple to capture the real pattern, like summarizing a novel as stuff happens. The whole art of ML is finding the sweet spot between those two.
Okay, I love this.
So before we finish, I want to go back to something you said at the beginning.
You said this episode isn't Learn ML in 20 minutes, it's the map.
Looking at the map now, what do you actually want people to take away?
Three things. One, you now know what the landscape looks like. Four paradigms: supervised, unsupervised, reinforcement, self-supervised. They're not competing. They're complementary. They're clusters on the same skill tree, and real competence means understanding the relationships between them. Two, you know the vocabulary: gradient descent, backpropagation, overfitting, features. You can read an AI article now and not just nod along. Three, you know which door matches you. If you want rigor, start with Andrew and G's course or specialization. If you want to build something right now and understand later, start with fast.ai. If you want to build the tools themselves, start with Carpathy's Zero to Hero series. All three are free. All three have produced people who work at the actual companies building the stuff.
And you don't have to become an ML engineer. You just have to become ML literate.
That's it. That's the whole point. You don't need to be Escoffier. You just need to know why the sauce broke.
I love that.
All right. So remember, in episode 148, when we talked about AI coding assistants dealing you a starter deck,
React, Next.js, Tailwind, all that.
You were using ML outputs every day through those tools, but you had no idea what was under the hood.
Now you kind of do.
And if you want to go deeper, the sources are in the show notes. Andrew and G's machine learning specialization on Coursera. Jeremy Howard and Rachel Thomas's Fast AI course. Andrej Karpathy's Zero to Hero on YouTube. Grant Sanderson's 3 Blue 1 Brown Neural Network series. Michael Nielsen's free online book Neural Networks and Deep Learning, which has maybe the best written explanation of backpropagation that exists. These people built the field, and they're giving the knowledge away. The least we can do is send them an audience.
So what's next?
Where do we go from here?
Well, we just talked about how models learn from data, but we didn't talk about what happens when the data itself is wrong. Not accidentally wrong. Deliberately poisoned. Adversarial machine learning. People who figure out how to make a model see a stop sign as a speed limit sign. Researchers who can make a spam filter classify malware as safe by adding invisible pixels to an image. The entire field of attacking ML models is genuinely terrifying, and I think we need to go there next.
Oh no!
Oh, I don't like that at all.
It's really bad, and it's really cool, which is, you know, our whole thing.
The clown cast guarantee, it's bad and it's cool.
See you next week, everybody.
See you next week.